Tiff, I'm so exhausted and I just lost a penny out of my loafers.
Oh no. Did you have to walk from the satellite lot?
All the way from the satellite lot, which I don't know. I'm kind of afraid of getting rabies. We've learned about how rabies is a thing that you have to worry about with squirrels. And
I think you're thinking of Pawnee and the raccoons, actually.
Oh, that's right. That's another city.
And yeah.
Apparently, some people think that they exist in the same universe, that the Office universe and the Pawnee, Indiana Parks and Rec universe are in the same. They're the same thing.
Actually, the person who played the chair model.
Uh-huh.
Also appears in Parks and Rec as Miss Pawnee Pageant Trish.
See? And I think that there are other things that go between the two.
So there you go. Yeah. So maybe it does. So she was also a Miss Pawnee and then she went on to model chairs.
There you go. How nice.
Connect the worlds. It's amazing.
It's pretty soon you'll see the Hulk no, that doesn't happen. I'm sorry, folks.
Those of you out there listening. Different universe.
The Marvel universe is not in the Office/Parks and Rec universe, sadly.
The mockumentary universe.
There's the Marvel universe and the mockumentary universe. That means that my favorite film, my favorite mockumentary film, What We Do in the Shadows, must exist in the same universe. Folks, can you tell there's just not a whole lot going on in this episode?
Because Tiff vamping. And I have.
Yeah, it's acting.
We're talking about season 4, episode 10, Chair Model, which is a big come down from the big episode
one of the best episodes of The Office ever.
Yeah, it was so high and then we come crashing down, and they even kind of changed the title of this episode where it was originally supposed to be Michael dating, and they changed it because they didn't want any spoilers for the episode Dinner Party to kind of spoil in the titles what happened during the dinner party. So they changed it to Chair Model. So there's not a lot that happens here. It's kind of a fluff episode.
It's a whole episode just to tell us that Michael is now broken up with Jan.
Remember after my dinner party when I said that I was swearing off women?
I definitely remember your dinner party.
I think what I meant was that I am completely swearing off one woman, Jan.
There is some drama going on at the office park where the construction workers are parked in all their spaces. So that's kind of creating a little upheaval and some interest going on. But really, it's not a whole lot to grasp at.
That's what she said.
Oh. We should just try and find as many "that's what she said" moments as we possibly can to entertain ourselves.
There's something to latch on to. Exactly, like you just said. But yeah, I mean, it's three kind of little dealy bobs here. We've got, you know, this main story about Michael being broken up that's tied in with a sort of, it's not a love triangle, it's a chair triangle. And it has Michael, it has Pam, and it has Creed on it.
I like to call it the chair hierarchy.
You can make a poster that has everybody in the chair hierarchy. Mm-hmm. And for some reason, Creed needs three chairs.
When Pam gets Michael's old chair, I get Pam's old chair. Then I'll have two chairs, only one to go.
Which is the one good moment that I enjoy from that whole section. But this one kind of reminds me a little bit of another episode involving printers and chairs. And so I kind of like, I don't know, there's sort of a
office politics happening. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a reminder that, you know, these are people working in an office. And yeah, after a while, your chairs do get bad. And I can remember when I worked at Newsy, and I would, you know, be at my desk in my chair, and it was like a shared workspace. So people would come in. There were good chairs and there were bad chairs. Mm-hmm. And those of us who were full-time employees sort of had claim on the good chairs, but every once in a while, because we had a lot of, it was next to a university. So we had a lot of students coming in that we would teach, and go through.
And then you lose your good chair.
And then you lose your good chair to one of these students.
And then you'd have to go hunt it down.
And you would go up to the student and say, "Look, I'm sorry, but I work here and you have to get out of that chair." And then I would take the good chair back. So I totally get this, because if you're sitting in a chair, you know, most of the day and you're, editing video or whatever you happen to be doing. Like it's a thing. So I kind of like that that's there, that, you know, you can remember sort of, oh, when this person goes, or when in this case, Michael gets a new chair because he's the boss, then I'm going to try to get that chair. And then it sort of moves down. And I'm kind of curious. I'm like, who has the worst chair in the office? And it's probably Toby.
Yeah. They would probably make sure it was Toby.
Yeah. It's like the worst chair. He's like, every time his gets kicked out, that one like goes directly into the dumpster. It's the last one to go.
See, I feel like this is an entire episode dedicated to the idea that the mundane happenings in an office will sometimes feel extremely important to the people involved. Oh. Just like with the chair, with the parking spots, like these small problems, when they're the focus of your world, are big problems. And that's what we're seeing, because that's what happens sometimes in a closed space, in an office with very few people. The tiny things like losing your chair, or getting to get a new chair, or not being able to park in your parking spot and having to walk a little bit further to get to work. Just, it becomes a big disruption in your day when your day is usually so consistent and mundane. So we're seeing these small problems highlighted into bigger catastrophes for all of our characters.
I love that observation. And there are two reasons why. One, because it's a great observation, but two, it's because I will never pass on bringing up a reference to my favorite scene in my favorite animated film. If you've ever seen A Bug's Life, towards the beginning of the film, in fact, it might be one of the first scenes in the film, the ants are marching along and a leaf comes falling out of the sky and lands in front of this group of ants.
Yes. Yep. And the line of ants.
Yeah. The line of ants. They start freaking out. Yeah, they're like, we don't know what to do. And they have to have the one ant come over that's like the doctor and say, it's going to be okay. And that's, but it's, you know, it seems like a small problem for us. Mm-hmm. But if you are used to this consistency, you're used to this experience, and then that changes, it's not great. And I love the idea that, because this is true too, think about how Kevin and Andy are super proud of the fact that they work out a way to get their spots back. Mm-hmm. And if you've ever solved a problem in an office, you actually do become a little bit of a hero. Or if you just like do something that people are excited about, someone brings in coffee, for people, or I don't know, even does something as small as like, oh, that fan is always squeaking whenever we turn it on and someone fixes that. It's a big deal in the office. And so this is, you know, I love that Kevin gets a winning moment, and that's a sweet thing, but the bigger thing there is, like you're saying, you know, these seem like small little deals, but they actually can be a pretty big inconvenience, and you could quickly become a hero by helping with that.
I do like the pairing together of Kevin and Andy. I think that that's a really unlikely pair that we haven't seen before. We haven't seen them really doing anything together. And these are two characters that I feel like they never get the win. You know, they never get the triumph. They're never the leader.
Andy's
they're never
a terrible salesman.
Yeah.
Kevin's like, just sort of bumbling.
A terrible accountant. Like, and they never have that sweet, satisfying moment of being the hero. And they both get that in this episode, especially when we find out that Kevin is also, like Michael, going through a breakup. Aww. In a very different way. But his fiance essentially leaves him. So we kind of get that as backstory through some dialogue here and there between the characters. And I think a confessional, Kevin brings it up then too.
After Stacy left, things did not go well for a while. And it was hard to see. It's just nice to win one.
We're seeing this, that the win for him today in the office means even more, because in his personal life, he's been pretty down. I also want to bring up that there's that great scene where it's just off camera, but you can so tell that when Michael and Kevin are talking to each other, Kevin is totally soaking his feet when he's sitting on the couch, which is a reference back to when he gave himself the foot bath for the Christmas party.
We've probably talked about this before, but I can't ever stop thinking about the fact that Kevin choosing himself for Secret Santa messed up somebody else, and it just is never resolved. So that little reference always is like, ah, I hate that he chose himself. You're not supposed to do that. That messed everything up.
Let's bring it back to Michael's dilemma of love,
yes,
where he now is addressing the office and basically asking them to set him up on some dates. And his speech to everybody is so endearing and mm-hmm. pretty compelling.
Nothing would ever get done in this office without a formal request, would it? Well, fine. Here goes.
I don't think that
now,
this
okay,
is...
I know that this is probably not appropriate, but I need help. Because I want to play ball with my kids before I get too old. And before that happens, I need to get laid. And before that happens, I need to be in love. And I don't want to hear, I don't know, I can't help. No, no, I'm a catch, and I am not going to be the one who got away.
Yeah, a couple of his phrasings are a little off, and it wouldn't be Michael if it wasn't.
Exactly.
But it was like, yeah, why doesn't he deserve happiness? You know,
he deserves love. Everyone deserves love.
He wants a family and he wants all of that in his life. And so I think that that's why everyone started to help.
Agreed. Especially after being in this abusive relationship twice. You know what
I mean?
That
a lot of people saw.
Yeah. We got to see that play out not only at the dinner party, but also when he was having monkey problems, when he's having money problems. And again, most of that ended up being his own issues and not Jan, but also, you know, he's working two jobs and trying to run away on a train and all that kind of stuff. It all plays into the office sort of seeing those two bleed together, those two things bleed together for him. So, yeah, I would hear that and I would want to help him out. But more importantly, the beautiful gift that the writers gave those of us who like to quote things from The Office when now, I don't have like perfect opportunities to use this, but anytime I can say, dude, this is a Wendy's restaurant is a good, very good day for me.
Okay. Wendy, hot and juicy redhead. We'll give this a try.
Wendy's.
Hello, Wendy. This is Kevin's friend, Michael.
This isn't Wendy.
Oh, I'm sorry. Could you put her on, please?
Dude, this is a Wendy's restaurant.
Kevin. Okay.
I like that it was Kevin that wrote down the Wendy's on the love cards, as Michael calls them. That made me really laugh. I like when other people besides Jim and Pam end up pranking each other within the office. So that also gave me a little bit of joy. Good job, Kevin. You're winning all over this episode.
Yes, you are. And you know what? I'm proud of you, bud.
Oh, and Jim writes down Pam's mom.
Who are you putting down?
Oh, you don't know her.
Who is it?
Your mom?
Yeah, whatever.
Which I'm just going to say, a little foreshadowing maybe. I'm not going to say more than that, but yeah, that made me giggle. Sorry, Pam's mom.
Just pretend like every day Pam's mom is coming in and then you know how to act in the office.
That's right.
The other little bit that takes place here, you know, the sort of, because we talked about Kevin and Andy winning and the way they win. I love how this works where we have Kevin sort of given the play-by-play on the five families. And that's fun.
The five families are the five companies of Scranton Business Park. The bosses rarely meet. There's Michael Scott, regional manager, Dunder Mifflin. Bob Vance, Vance Refrigeration. Paul Faust, of Disaster Kits Limited. They call him Cool Guy Paul. W.B. Jones of W.B. Jones Heating and Air. Gray Day Badass. And Bill Kress of Kress Tool and Die. Bill Kress is super old and really mean.
Such a good explanation moment for all of the Scranton Business Park happenings, because we do know there are other businesses there and we've known about Vance Refrigeration, but we really weren't quite sure what else was happening in this strange little business park in the middle of Scranton, Pennsylvania. But now we know all the businesses
and their personalities.
I don't have time for this, guys. Just give them back their spaces.
Okay.
We good? Okay. could have done this over email.
So the five families, they have to assemble to talk to them. That was kind of neat, again, that Kevin and Andy pulled that off. We have a fun little moment, which I thought of you during this, with Jim basically telling Pam, yo, 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 like, I'm going to... They're being flirty, they're being sweet, and he's talking about proposing to her.
I love how they are both totally joking about it. Well, they're like half-zy joking, right? It's like serious joking.
Joking, but not.
No, I, I'm not gonna move in with anyone unless I'm engaged.
Have I not proposed to you yet?
I don't.
Oh.
No.
Well, mm-mm. That's coming.
Oh, right now?
No, I'm not gonna do it right here. That would be rather lame.
Okay, so then when?
Pam, I'm not gonna tell you. Hate to break it to you, but that's not how that works.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Wait, I'm serious. It's happening.
Okay.
And when it happens, it's going to kick your ass, Beasley. So, stay sharp.
I've been warned.
Pam doesn't quite want to, like, jump right in and believe him. It's easier and more fun to joke with him. Mm-hmm. These parts of the episode are kind of the catalyst to start the idea of Jim and Pam moving in together because of what happened with the landlord, which is something we should go back and talk about. But it does start that conversation of being engaged. And I really, really like at the very end of the episode when Jim gets down to tie his shoe and fakes out Pam.
Hey, Pam. Will you wait for me 1 second while I tie my shoe?
I hate you.
What? My shoe is untied. What is your problem? Oh, my God. You thought I was... Oh.
Oh, no, oh. No, no, no. How could I have thought that? How could I have thought that?
Her face looks like she's like, this is this. Oh, my gosh, this is it, right? She's like so serious, really into it. Then he fakes her out. I love that she rolls with it. She calls him a jerk or whatever she says, and like they go with it. And then she just rolls with the joke. She doesn't latch onto it. She doesn't get angry. Like, I love that about her. And it makes me love her even more of how damn charming she is about it.
Yeah, and she is charming.
It makes it all so sweet, and it makes their relationship feel really on level. They really feel like equals, and it's just really endearing to watch because now we've kind of moved past all of that like hyped up will they, won't they romance of the two of them.
Right. Yeah. We don't need to worry about sort of the courting stages of the relationship and that kind of deal. This is sort of more locked and solid.
We basically know this is happening. Yes. But so to have that little bit of joke still left between them, you know, about the engagement and everything, it's really nice to have that kind of hanging out there.
That's what she said.
Nice to have that hanging out there. Really?
Look, it's not good. It's gross, but that is it works.
I mean,
don't think about it too. Nope, I'm going to stop because then I'm going to say something that also works. Is that's what she said. So
stop your brain.
Stop the phrasing. moving along to talk about, yes, what you had mentioned we need to discuss. I almost like completely forgot this scene, but, you know, sort of none of the dates, none of the people that anyone was writing down really pans out except for Pam's landlord. So Michael, you know, wants to take Pam up on this date opportunity. Landlady. Yes, exactly. That's a landlord and landlady are really just stupid terms that are so old school, and I wish that we had new ones for them. But leaser and leasee sound too legalese, so I'm not going to use those. Any hoodles. This property
any
owner.
Hooters.
Any hooters. Yeah. This property owner, Michael goes to go on a date with her, and I love his ignorant overestimation of himself sometimes, where he's just like, he's so convinced that the person that he's going to be going on a date with is this very attractive individual that he sees across the, you know, across the cafe, that despite what he was told she's going to be wearing and looks like, he decides that this woman is the person that he's supposed to be meeting. And I don't know. It's brilliant Michael Scott, and it makes me appreciate that character.
Again, it's like him performing for the camera, right? Like, be like, oh yeah, camera, who's here? That's totally my super hot date that's coming up. But then he reacts so rude and terrible to this poor woman who ends up actually being the person to meet him. And she is not uncute.
No.
Like, it's just, maybe she has a little bit of, you know, laugh
she's
lines
not,
around
she's
her
not
eyes.
She's not a bombshell.
But
like, she's
no,
not.
No, she's like the same age as Michael.
Right.
Like, come on.
It's level playing field. And the part where he says he's not Michael and he's calling for, or they're calling for his drink and all of that, it gives me that same awkward feeling that I get with the job fair episode of The Office when Michael's being mean to that high schooler. It gives me that same sort. It's just that cringy sort of mean awkwardness.
I feel for this woman because I can't help be like, oh God, she like just went home after this. Yeah. And like, what was she like? That is a devastating, like, awful situation to be put in. And
he said she was like the nice old lady at the bus. And yeah, to go home and have to think about her repeating those thoughts over and over again. And that's just sad. It's sad. It's really sad.
There is another moment of extreme disregard for reality is
nice.
Andy's speech about the everyman.
Did I do this for me? No. I did this for the little guy, for Joe Sixpack. The guy who wakes up every morning in his $400 a month apartment, wonders how he's going to pay his mortgage that month, wonders how he's going to fill his car up with oil, wonders, how am I going to pay my kids' orphanage bills? That guy shouldn't have to wonder where he's going to park.
He doesn't understand how rent works or how childcare works, or it shows just how out of touch Andy is when he's talking about standing up for like the little guy.
Joe Sixpack.
There it is. Joe Sixpack, very blue collar. Like, he is just so fancy pants. He has no idea what's going on. And that speech just proves it, which is so funny.
He started out complaining about losing a penny from his loafer. Like, he's wearing classical penny loafers and always has a different stupid outfit on. He's wealthy enough to not have ever gotten that. And I feel like he's the type of person
that
complains.
His hands have never worked a day in his life.
Exactly. He's the type of person that complains like, oh, my nanny never taught me that when I was a kid.
There you go. That's it. I mean, I guess we shouldn't hate on Andy if we want to really be like super thoughtful and inclusive, but yeah, he can sometimes be really tone deaf when it comes to these kind of things.
I think that, you know, the complaint that we have here, it's not about Andy being that he grew up wealthy. It's the fact that he's being ignorant now. Mm-hmm. Like, this is a moment where he's being ignorant and acting and trying to put forth the idea that he's awesome because he's thinking of the little guy, but he doesn't actually know the little guy and he's not actually thinking of the little guy. So this is not, you know, it's disingenuous for him to claim like, oh yeah, I might be wealthy, but this is the moment for this, for Joe Sixpack. It's like, you don't know Joe Sixpack at all.
Yeah. Andy hasn't started his learning quite yet. I think he will though, eventually in the last few seasons, because we see Michael gradually learning, right? Like, we see him change and slowly become a better, more aware person. And I think we see that of Andy too in the later seasons, but we just are not there yet. We end this episode with a beautiful musical tribute with Michael and Dwight over at the chair model's grave, which I think is really funny that Dwight went all out and actually found out all about this chair model. He tried really hard to help out Michael. He called all the right things and he got all the right information and eventually came to the conclusion that she had died in a car accident.
The furniture company gave me the name of the advertising agency. They gave me the name of the photographer. The photographer, a Spaniard, used a Wilkes-Barre modeling agency. The agency gave me the following information. Deborah Shoshlevsky, 142 South Windsor Lane, dead, car accident, case closed.
They actually went to her grave and they sang American Pie all night. Is that the song? Yeah, that's the song.
Sure. I don't know if that's what it's called, but that's certainly the song.
That's totally what it's called.
Is it really called that?
I don't know.
I don't know either. Like, I'm not questioning you as if you're wrong. I just, if anyone says the American Pie song, I know what they're going to be talking about.
I think it is. I'm trying to very quickly look this all up, but I am finding, oh, it is. Yep. It is American Pie. Yes. Originally, a bit of trivia here, that was supposed to be the song, let's see, Candle in the Wind by Elton John. But Elton John got super pissed when 30 Rock did it. And he was very offended by their parody that he then would not let the rights go.
Oh, wow.
For The Office to use it. And it went through a couple different things. I think they were supposed to sing Legs and Ruby Tuesday. There was like a whole bunch of different songs being thrown out. But the performance that Steve Carell and Rainn Wilson did for the American Pie, it was just so good that they kept it for the episode.
It's pleasant, the way that they're like having fun together.
They both turned off the news. This'll be the day that I die.
Everyone sings the wrong lyrics, and that's the whole fun of it.
Yeah, I don't know any of the lyrics except for the chorus, and that's it. That's it. That's all for me.
You're just going to have to get better at that.
Perhaps I will have to do that. Is there anything else?
This episode doesn't have much.
we did a good job, I think, on...
We could have done this via email, really.
Nice. Nice. Very good. Very good reference. I love that. That was great. You get a Dundee in my
Thank
heart.
You.
From my heart to yours.
Oh, I love you, the Micah Hart Dundees.
They're very painful to remove, but they are very valuable. This was an episode. It's a filler, for sure. I would love to find someone who's like, you know what my favorite episode of The Office is? Chair Model.
I would like, if there is someone out there who can genuinely say that Chair Model was their favorite Office episode, please step forward and we will give you a Dundee.
Yes, let
week.
Yourself be known.
But it has to be genuine.
Yeah, you got to tell us, like, I'm going to question you, especially those of you who we hear from regularly. If suddenly Chair Model is your favorite episode, I'm going to be a little bit curious, but anyway. Oh, yeah.
If you have a tattoo of something referenced in this episode, I think that is indicative of being like, yeah, that's totally your favorite. You'll get a
Dundee for that. The five families is tattooed on their forehead.
Oh, the forehead tattoo is rough.
It is a little rough.
Anyway, so speaking of forehead tattoos, do you want to give out our Dundee?
I love that. That was the best segue I've ever heard.
So good.
This week's Dundee is another Nifty Gifty Award. It's Father's Day. And so, there are lots of good Father's Day gifts out there. But on Twitter, Levi Gilbert, that's at Levi Gilbert, shared his Father's Day gift from his wife and says, and the Dundee Award for Best Father's Day Gift Ever goes to, drumroll please, my wife. Please come up and accept your Dundee. And he took a photo of the gift that he received, and it is a very cute Dundee Award for Best Dad. So I thought that came in literally minutes before we started to record, and it touched my heart as I saw that, and I thought, we've given out Nifty Gifty Awards before for Dundee Award gifts, mm-hmm. and so to listener Levi's wife, we are happy to award you a Nifty Gifty Award. Get on up here and accept your Dundee.
Happy Father's Day, all those best dads out there.
But not Jeff.
What?
Michael Scott's stepdad, Jeff.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Well, Jeff wasn't actually his father, right? Or was he?
Yeah, it was his stepfather.
Oh, that's true. Yep. There we go. Too bad. Sorry, Jeff. No award for you.
No award for you, Jeff.
Be sure to go over and follow us over at tall_beats, and that's where you can submit cool stuff that we might like and choose for a Dundee. And you can also go become a member over at The Incomparable and get fun goodies from us at the end of the year and a special members-only bonus feed of all kinds of stuff from across the Incomparable Network, not just about our show. And you could join us in the conference room, members only Slack. So you get a lot of stuff from being an Incomparable member. Make sure you go check us out on Apple Podcasts. We love 5-star reviews. Don't go if you plan on leaving anything less. I don't bother. Please join us next week. Actually, before I say that, we are picking our final winner for the Michael Scott Playlist for Daryl Award. No, was it no learn about your culture award?
It was rap,
hip hop appreciation cultural awareness award, something like that. We will think of a better name in the meantime, but we'll be giving that out next week. So make sure you get in your final submission playlists and be sure to join us next week for Night Out.
Drove my Chevy to the levee, but the levee was dry.
Good old boys were drinking whiskey and rye.
Say, this will be the day that I die.
Do you know the Weird Al version?
No.
Oh, come on. The one about Star Wars? It's about Star Wars.
Is it really?
Yeah.
I don't know it. I'm sorry.
Are you kidding me?
I know like two Weird Al.
What kind of nerd are you?
I'm a young nerd.
Oh, you're just a baby nerd. You don't know.
I don't know Weird Al that well.
You better get to know him.
I know like two Weird Al songs, and unfortunately I don't know the one for American Pie. But you know, that music used to make me smile.
This here Anakin guy. No?
But that, I liked it. It sounded good so far.
It's too bad.
Save your mortal soul, and then can you have to dance real slow? Well, I know that you're in love with him, because I saw you dancing in the gym. The show turned off her shoes. No more rhythm and blues return. Rhythm and blues. This'll be the day that I die.